south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, you know, I'm always mentioning, as far as your plan B goes, if you're coming down to get residency in any Latin country, things change rapidly, so you got to jump on it now. While getting your paperwork filed and doing the waiting game is relatively easy. Because, you know, the dirty little secret is the U.S. does not want you to leave the barn. You're the lemming, right? The one to get milked up in the States. Of course, I don't think you milk lemmings. It's cows and sheep, right? Or goats, whatever. Anyway, that dirty little secret is the U.S. government does not want you to leave, especially with your assets. Unless, of course, you have your assets in a bank in a foreign country that has a branch in the U.S., then they can take them or lock them up at will with a phone call. But you knew that already, right? Anyway, the point is, you got to act on getting your residency now, before the U.S. government forces Latin governments to slam the doors completely. You know, in some Latin countries, you have to make huge investments to get your residency started, a couple of hundred grand in some cases. Whereas in some Latin countries, they're still way behind that curve. But that's changing fast. Oh, and here's something else. When you come down and get that Plan B activated, you know you're going to want to get health insurance, right? I mean, it's so damn cheap here in Latin America, and it's first world all the way, if you know what you're doing. And by the way, I've written a 100-plus page healthcare report that pretty much spells it all out for you. Hey, I've investigated it all. I've done the legwork, and I'm continuously doing so. If there's one thing I know is how to get first world healthcare here in Latin America at third world prices. That is a quarter to a fifth, even a sixth of what you pay up in the States. So how do you get my 100-page healthcare report? Well, if you're coming down to my Expat Insider Seminar, you get it for free. In fact, if you come to the seminar, I'm going to give you 70 different reports. Yeah, 70. Probably half of those reports I've written myself or have had some part in putting together. And believe me, some of those reports are very confidential. You're not going to find them on the internet. Anyway, as far as kicking that Plan B of yours into gear. When you come down, obviously, you're going to want to take advantage of that great, cheap, first-world healthcare insurance at third-world prices. But you'll find if you want to hook up with one of those insurance companies that's owned and operated by a big bank. I think it was the last show or the one before it where I spoke a lot about that, remember? Anyway, to get on a bank health insurance plan, first, you'll have to get a bank account there, right? And your lawyer will help you do that because you'll need a cosigner or a fiador, not exactly a cosigner. He's not on the hook for your charges or anything on that account. You see, a so-called fiador is just kind of a very trusted local reference. Once again, you'll hear that word a lot, fiador. And contrary to popular gringo belief, he doesn't have signing privileges on your account or power of attorney unless you give it to him. The point is, if you're going to live here in Latin America, you're going to need one. In other words, you can't just walk into a bank, even if you have your residency, and say, hey, I want to open a bank account. Soon enough, you'll find, as you fill out the paperwork, and it'll all be in Spanish, so you have to be with someone who speaks Spanish, because there's something like a 95% chance you won't. And even if you do, there's probably a 99% chance you can't read or understand the forms well enough to suss them out. Anyway, there'll be a spot for your fiador, name, address, phone number, occupation, and your relation to that person, the works. And your fiador will be your lawyer or some respected person, an accountant, a priest, whatever, that has an account at that bank, generally. And it has to be someone who's got a steady, reliable job, too. So, gringos, it just can't be your deadbeat surfer boy, or for you gringos, your girlfriend who's selling tortillas out in the plaza. The question is, how are you going to find that person if you're not hooked up with a law firm or a lawyer? By the way, lawyers are the best, most well-accepted fiadors of all. So how do you get a lawyer to sign that kind of paperwork for you? I mean, look, you can't just walk into a lawyer's office and say, hey, I'm thinking about being a client of yours. Can you be my fiador on a bank account? He's going to say, yeah, I can do that, of course, but I'm not going to do it for someone who just waltzes in off the street unless he actually does some business with me. So if you're just in there kind of testing the waters and shopping around for lawyers, he's not going to be your fiador. Same thing if you're going to rent an apartment. You'll need a fiador. Again, that person's not responsible for paying your rent if you default or you skip the country or anything. It's just that he's going to be a local professional reference that can vouch for your character. So when it comes to renting an apartment, 9 times out of 10, you'll need a fee door, and you'll always need one if you're writing up a contract. Though, oddly enough, some landlords will rent to a gringo month to month. It's part of your gringo advantage, but that's not usually the case. But I've seen it happen on occasion. Of course, if you're going to rent an apartment and you've got 6 months or a year's worth of cash in your hot, sweaty hands, I'm sure if you say you don't have a fiador, he's just going to take the cash and say, no problem. In fact, if you want to see a proprietario or landlord's eyes bug out, show him a wad of cash and say you're going to pay 6 months or a year ahead. I'll tell you what, gringo, you just made a best friend for life. Chances are you'll be godfather to his next kid, too. Now remember, I started out today's blatherings with some good reasons why you really have to go for your temporary or permanent residency in a Latin American country, and why it's time to get on it now before the opportunity slips away. Now the thing is, when it comes to health care insurance, it's really best to be a resident to take advantage of all those great plans. And that's the same thing in most cases when you're opening a bank account. Sure, there are some banks that'll open accounts if you're not a resident, but I'd say about 3/4 of all banks in Latin America will not, because it's just too complicated to fill out all that FATCA and GATCA paperwork for the U.S. government. However, if you're a resident, they know you're permanently in the country and you're going to be doing a lot of banking business. In other words, they're going to make some money with you, because they know if you're not a resident, you're probably not going to do much business with them because you'll be back in Cleveland most of the time. However, the situation changes if you're living on or very near the gringo tourist trail, Costa Rica, Cancun, Rio, whatever. In places like that where tourism brings in all the dough, most banks there will let you open an account without being a resident because that's the nature of their business, making money off of wire transfers, local funny money to dollar and back conversions, and direct deposits. But that's not the case when you're off the gringo tourist trail, which is around 95% of Latin America. So by all means, try to get your residency in your Latin country of choice. That way you'll be able to open an account at any bank. Of course, you'll need that fiador, a professional reference. And you'll have that because, as I've mentioned so many times, you'd be nuts not to hook up with a lawyer when you first get down to the country of your choice. At least walk into a lawyer's office after you've done your homework, of course. Introduce yourself. Have a little sit down. Tell them your situation. And tell them what you need now and what you'll be needing in the future. You'll need them to help you with a rental contract, utility hookup, buying a car, smartphone service, internet, health insurance, maybe a car mechanic, plumber, certain professionals. Tell them you'd like to have an overview of the good, the bad, the ugly neighborhoods in town. Everyone's got their own wish list, but you get the idea. That's right, your lawyer can help you and give you referrals on all that stuff and more. Oh, and this is important. Of course, you're going to need a lawyer if you get in a car accident. You'll want to call him and your insurance broker, and you'll need one too if you get pulled over at one of those police stops and you don't seem to be getting anywhere with your paperwork or a $20 bribe. So again, by all means, try to go for your temporary or permanent residency as soon as you can, because the laws are changing and they never get easier, only tougher. And that's because the U.S. puts pressure on Latin countries. In fact, all third world countries, clandestinely, of course, behind closed doors. And if a third world country doesn't comply with Uncle Scam, they just threaten to cut off some of those billions of dollars in aid and handouts, which is part of the skim all high-end, fat-ass Latin government officials absolutely count on for their princely lifestyles. How can I say that? How do I know about that stuff? Because I know some embassy people, and they talk when they're drunk. And for some reason, they're drunk a lot. People like to talk and open up to me. Of course, a lot of that stuff's off the record, but let me tell you. The overall plan by U.S. Big Brother is to make it so hard for people to get permanent or temporary residency in a third world country that most people who give it a half-assed try, they just run into so many obstacles, they throw in the towel. Because it does take some perseverance and diligence, which is all the more reason to get your Plan B started right away, which includes getting your paperwork for residency. That should be your first step. All right, let me give you a very recent example on how Latin countries are getting tougher on their residency requirements. By the way, most of those new little annoying changes are unannounced and you don't find out till you're going through the process and say, "Hey, wait a minute. You mean I gotta get that stupid piece of paperwork too? Why didn't you tell me about that in the first place?" Well, that's because most of the time they don't publicize it. Some bureaucratic dickhead just makes the change and you have to do it. For example, let's take Guatemala, which has, as you longtime listeners know, residency requirements that are quite lenient compared to a lot of other Latin American countries. In fact, it's right up there at the top. It's one of the cheapest and easiest ones to get, at least for now. Of course, as with all Latin residency programs, it seems like some of the steps go at a snail's pace. But that aside, and it's true for most all Latin countries, the Guatemala residency program, especially the temporary residency program, is just a snap as long as you have a Guatemalan lawyer helping you out and you have a nice clean police report or good conduct report from the states. But things change in tiny little steps, making things a bit more difficult every time. For example, I just heard of a case where a person going for Guatemalan residency was rejected because his good conduct report, his police report, was not clean. Though he'd never been convicted of a felony, he had a misdemeanor, which not so long ago wouldn't have stopped him from getting residency. But now it will. That means if you got a DUI or some kind of fairly serious traffic violation and it shows up in your police report, you ain't gonna get residency in Guatemala. Nor in most all other Latin countries either. Now, I don't know how serious a traffic violation has to be to end up on your police good conduct report, but there have been cases. Then I guess it would be a police bad conduct report, right? I suppose if you leave the scene of an accident, it's a hit and run, or you had a gun in the car without the proper paperwork, or even an ounce of weed in your glove compartment. Who knows? If that stuff ends up on your police report, it's not considered a clean report. And then you're screwed for getting residency. But, you know, there are workarounds for that. Let me tell you one right now. You just go to an adjacent county or state where you have friends or relatives. You just go down to the nearest sheriff's department there. Of course, they'll ask you for your address, and you'll put the address down where you happen to be staying. Not exactly a lie, is it? And guess what? You'll get a clean, good conduct report from that county. Remember, in Guatemala and just a few other Latin American countries, all you need is a sheriff's report from the local county. But, as mentioned, things are getting tougher. Slowly but surely, all Latin countries are turning to the FBI report, otherwise known as your rap sheet. That means in time, I'd say within the next 1 to 3 years, all Latin countries will require an FBI background check. And that's nationwide. Not to mention, you'll have to give up your fingerprints. That's how they do an FBI report. The only good thing about an FBI report is you can do it all by mail. However, for example, suppose you're living in Panama. You've been down there a long time. And finally, you get tired of leaving the country every 6 months to get your passport stamped, because that's what you have to do if you don't have residency. You only got a 90-day tourist visa. And you say, okay, I'm going to apply for residency. That means you have to get an FBI report. However, if you go to the FBI website and download the PDF that tells you how to do it, you'll find they will not send the results to a foreign country. That means you have to have a U.S. address. Could be your mom's house or whatever. And when she gets it, hopefully it'll be clean. She'll FedEx it or UPS it to you in Panama, and you can take it from there. But what if you're in Panama and don't have any immediate relatives in the States that you could have your report shipped to? Or what if you have relatives in the States, but you're on the outs with them and they don't want anything to do with you because you left the good old Big Brother US of A and gave the finger to Uncle Scam and are now the black sheep of the family living in Panama? That happens, you know. In fact, just because you're related to someone by blood doesn't make you family with them. It just makes you related. Hey, I personally have a lot of blood relatives up in the States that are time vampires, liars, parasites, hangers-on, gossips, sneaky, untrustworthy, and just plain jerks. In other words, that was reason 1,246 why I got the hell out of Dodge a long time ago. Hey, not to say I haven't got some excellent relatives, but I've got 56 first cousins on my mother's side alone, which means, statistically speaking, I've got a lot of asswipes in my family. And something like 2.17 psychopaths, statistically speaking, too. And I'm thinking of one of them right now. And the other one, well, I don't know. Could be me. You think? A lot of good, level-headed people, too, but they're no fun to talk about, are they? Anyway, the point is it's getting tougher and tougher to fulfill the requirements for residency in Latin American countries. For example, here's a question in an email from Mr. B. He says, "Hey, Johnny. I understand the new regs in Guatemala State that if you have temporary residency and are moving to permanent residency after a two-year period, you have to get some additional paperwork from the states and have it apostilled. That's new. It wasn't like that before. In other words, I have to get a new sheriff's good conduct report from where I used to live. Hardly makes sense because I don't live there anymore. How could I have a record of any kind? So, Johnny, he says, do you know a way to get that sheriff's report and get it apostilled without having to go back to the states and do it? All right, thanks for that, Mr. B. You're right. Obviously, those malignant government fatheads never thought that one through. Why would you need a police report from a place you don't live anymore?
Duh.
What a waste of time and the money for the plane flight, etc. Well, the good news is if you've got a relative, they can go down to the county sheriff's department and pick up a police or so-called good conduct report for you. The fact is, I've known a few gringos who had their moms, dads, brothers, and sisters do that for them. Of course, can't do that with a friend. You got to have the same name. They just won't give out that information to someone that's not a close relative. The fact is, one gringo told me he went through that process and they wouldn't even give it to his mom. So he just wrote up a little letter in the form of an email saying he was down in Costa Rica. Yeah, and he really was. And he was applying for an English teaching job at a school and they required a good conduct report from his hometown. He emailed that off to his mom. His mom printed out that email, took it down to the sheriff's department. They asked no questions that time and gave her his good conduct report. It was as easy as that. And the fact is, if you are in Latin America applying for a call center or a teaching job, they will require a good conduct report. That's more or less a routine matter, so it's not out of the ordinary. Now, as Mr. B asked in his email, what about getting it apostilled? Or as some people say, apostilled, which means certified by the state you got the report in. And if it's an FBI report, certified by the U.S. State Department. Well, you can do all that by mail, too. How do you do that? Well, you go to your particular state's State Department. Just do a search for that on the internet. There'll be a state website. Let's say it's Minnesota. And if you look at the services provided in the drop-down menu, it'll have one that says certifying and apostilling of documents. And you click on that one, and you're all set. In fact, every state will let you download a PDF document that explains it all, and you print it out and fill it in, send it off to the state, and you can get that document back in probably 2 weeks. So in Mr. B's case, that means he'll have to have some relative go to the sheriff's department in the county he came from in the States, pick up his good conduct report. Again, it can't help but be clean because he isn't there anymore.
Duh.
Then, document in hand, have that person, that relative or family member, download that PDF document I was telling you about from his state's State Department. Which, by the way, is kind of confusing because it's different from the U.S. State Department. We're talking about each state having their own so-called State Department. I know it sounds crazy and redundant, and it is, but that's how those malignant government bureaucracies operate. Anyway, your family member will then download and print out that PDF document I was talking about and send it up to the state, and then they'll get the documents back, and when they get them, they'll FedEx them or UPS them to you in Guatemala. Then, of course, you hand that stuff off to your lawyer, and he does the rest. By the way, Mr. B, who's been living in Guatemala a couple of years now, he's our expert on teaching English as a foreign language online to Chinese kids. Remember the show that I did explaining all that? Now, to refresh your memory on that, he's the guy who's making $18+ an hour teaching those kids. It's an excellent way for new green gringo expats living here in Latin America to make some money on the side. And nope, you don't even need a college degree. It's a great ground floor opportunity to make some money when you first get down if you need to have a job. And Mr. B is our expert. In fact, he spoke at my last Expat Insiders seminar, gave the highlights on just how to do it. In fact, he was such a hit at the last seminar, I'm going to invite him again to the January seminar too, which will add just a little more water to the fire hose for you seminar attendees. Oh, and speaking of the seminar, like I said, it's about a month away from kicking off. You still got plenty of time to sign up, even enough time to get your paperwork together to start your temporary or permanent residency. That is, kill two birds with one stone. Come to the seminar and start your residency process. So for all the info and details, just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. And don't forget one very important point. The seminar starts on Saturday, January 5th, but you must arrive in Guatemala and check in to our very first hotel on the Friday before. That's January 4th. By the way, that night is also included in the price of your seminar. So once again, you must arrive by Friday, January 4th, or earlier. A lot of people come a day or two or even a couple of weeks earlier to do some of their own exploring or hook up with Jen from the Expat Concierge Service to investigate some of the things on their own bucket lists, whether it's physicians, dentists, insurance, rentals, buying a vehicle, land, home care, nurses, hospitals, business opportunities, whatever. Oh, and that live-in nurses thing, man, what a deal, huh? I say, screw nursing homes. Come down here to Latin America, rent an apartment, $400 or $500 a month, pay a live-in nurse, $500 a month. Now, isn't that 1,000 times better and more humane than dumping grandma or even yourself into a smelly, old, doped-out situation in a heartless U.S. nursing home? So for around $6,000 a year, you get a 24/7 live-in nurse, one-on-one, whereas up in the States, it would cost you 10 times as much for just a year in a putrid nursing home. Of course, we'll go over all that in great detail at the seminar. Oh, and here's something you'll want to know about. That real estate bubble is starting to pop. And that's a bubble that exists throughout Latin America and most evident in the medium and large cities and, of course, on the gringo tourist trail. Which brings me to this article right out of a Panama City newspaper that points this out precisely. Entitled, and this says it all, Real Estate Market in Panama Deflates. And I'll translate and give you some excerpts here. It says, the high supply of apartments and houses in residential areas has pushed down prices in upper middle class and high-end residential areas. Then it says, where even in 2013, the 2- and 3-bedroom apartments in Panama City's most desirable areas were rented at prices above $2,000 and $3,000 a month. Remember, Panama uses the U.S. dollar. Man, I would never pay that for an apartment, never in Latin America. $2,000 and $3,000 a month, 2- and 3-bedroom? You got to be nuts. But then it says, in 2018, according to MartesFinanciero.com website, prices of real estate have plummeted by an average of 20% in 2018. Then it says, unfortunately, in the medium term, it does not seem the supply of residential real estate will decrease. In fact, development projects in the works and under construction will overshadow any supply and demand equilibrium. Then we have this article, an interview of a guy named Aldo Stagnario. He's the president of the Panamanian Association of Real Estate Agents and Promoters. He says the fall in rental and purchase prices is happening because, surprise, surprise, there's definitely an oversupply, he says, and demand has not grown by the same magnitude, not even close. He says there's going to be some sort of a price war, and that's where the public can benefit. And this will hopefully, he says, reactivate the residential and commercial real estate market. But he also said, surprise, surprise, this has never happened before. The value of real estate has never been on a downward trend, only upward. Yeah, right. Isn't that typical real estate talk? What a bunch of dopes. Come on. How long have we been predicting this? 8 years now? Then the article goes on to say, the times when Panama real estate projects were selling fast are already in the past. And then it says, and this is really bad news for the builders, but not for us gringos and expats. It's estimated that it will take 7 years to fill or commercialize through the usual channels the oversupply of units currently existing in the real estate market. And that 7-year figure is if no other units come online in that time, which is a pipe dream, because there are hundreds of projects on the drawing board and in construction right now that are not counted as viable units for rent or sale. All right, me, Johnny, again. So what's that mean? Well, someone's just popped the bubble. Just a matter of how fast the air escapes now. All right, you want more? It says in Panama, 83% of the houses and apartments for sale or rent range in the price from $150,000 to $2 million. Meanwhile, 80% of the clients who approach realtors want to buy a property that's priced below $150,000. So there's a terrible mismatch between buyers and sellers, since, as this article starkly points out, builders and developers are in denial and continue to build at the high end. As one Panama REMAX realtor points out, the developers that are building housing units on the high end, $150,000 to $2 million, and that's the price range that developers were once calling their profit sweet spot, have been targeting wealthy Asians, Americans, and Europeans. predicting there would be ever-increasing numbers of such buyers. But the high-end market has weakened considerably. And as for wealthy Latins that can afford to spend that kind of money, most already have the luxury houses and apartments of their dreams. And he says at the high end of the market, where you spend $300,000 or more on a condo or a house, people almost never buy them as investments to put on the rental market. They prefer to live in the luxury units and invest in lower cost units that are much easier to rent. And finally, it says, the proof in the pudding is that as of November 2018, the Panama City Board of Realtors reports that the inventory of unoccupied apartments in Panama City alone amounts to approximately 7,800 units. Wow, that makes Panama City truly a renter's market. By the way, the title of that article, Panama's Real Estate Market is Saturated. All right, me, Johnny, here again. You know, Panama's kind of the bellwether for whatever happens in the real estate business in all of Latin America. So what we've got here is the first domino to fall in that big real estate hyperinflated bubble. However, there's one thing you should know. It's a little different than the real estate market up in the States. For example, if you have a luxury apartment in Chicago and it's unoccupied, you can't sell it. It's not renting. Eventually, the owner keeps dropping the rental price lower and lower till he gets someone in, because as soon as winter comes, you got to keep the heat on. You got to keep it maintained and such, or else the pipes will freeze. The place will go right downhill. We'll have water damage, the whole works. So when there's a housing glut or a financial crisis, real estate prices in the States will drop rather rapidly across the board. You saw that in 2008 and 2009. And the fact that up in the States, real estate's heavily leveraged. However, in Latin America, banks don't make those kind of crazy loans. You got to put a lot of money down, and there's no frost or freezing. So owners will try to maintain their rental prices in vacant properties for a much longer time, because they're so much cheaper to maintain while empty. There's no furnace, so no electric or gas bills. No freezing of pipes, so no water damage. Hey, I've seen vacant, luxury, even moderate apartments sit for 2 years unoccupied, till the owner finally figured out he was never going to get a person in there to rent unless he dropped his asking price 30, 40, even 50%. So that's the difference when you have a big oversupply of units up in the States versus Latin America. The Latin owners can hold out a lot longer before they finally drop their prices. But they will, and they are. Oh, and you guys and gals coming to my Expat Insider Seminar. You're going to find out how to take advantage of all that.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy.